Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we are going to have a guest that we've had on before, Gary Bartlett. Gary is a photographer from the Canada area. He worked many years for Muscle Mag International for Bob Kennedy. And we had Gary on before to talk about the 81 Olympia. And we brought him back to talk about a variety of different subjects. Actually, our conversation went on so long that it's going to be a two-part interview. So this week, me and Gary start off talking about the sale of the Mr. Olympia. AMI just sold the Mr. Olympia to Jake Wood. So we start talking about that. And then we start talking about bodybuilding magazines and how they are no longer viable in today's internet world. So we had a discussion about that. And Gary, of course, is an old school guy like me. So he grew up reading the magazines. And then we're going to talk about Gary's working for Muscle Mag and what it was like to work with Bob Kennedy for all those years. And then we'll finish off our conversation talking about the 1982 Mr. Olympia. Gary said this is the Olympia that's kind of forgotten because it took place after 1980 and 81. But Gary was there in London and got to see Chris Dickerson win his title. And so we talk about him and Frank Zane and Casey Viator and some of the guys who Casey thought should have placed much higher, and his pick for the guy that should have won that wasn't even in the top five. So that'll be interesting. So we're going to have our discussion with Gary Bartlett in just one moment. First, I want to mention that we are brought to you by our sponsor, Old School Labs. I have been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. It's the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner called Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is their two-stage pre-workout, or Vintage Brawn, which is the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is also the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia, Samir Banoot, and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will receive 12% off your order when you go to oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right. So we got a lot of feedback from last week's interview with Corey Everson. She's obviously very, very popular. I expected that, but a lot of people really love that interview. So I'm going to read some of the comments we got. Put it on YouTube. So if you are on YouTube, go to my channel, which is under my name, John Hansen, and you can see I'm putting now our podcast up on YouTube. So we are getting some really positive reviews of that for the most part and a lot of views. This one got almost 1,000 views already in the last week, so that's pretty good for my page. So let me read these comments. KAG said, women's bodybuilding has never been the same since she left. Beautiful, smart, artistic. To me, Corey is the greatest. George Clooney said she is really a beautiful lady in real life. Shade on a Cool Day said she seems like a really nice person. Frank Signorelli said, great interview. I was always a fan of hers. Hopefully you can get some others from that era. Derek Solara said, it would have been great to get a few more details on her actual training type. I've been in this 32 years. You rarely find detailed training programs and eating schedule in her words spoken, etc. You might catch some random ones in the late 80s, Flex or Muscle and Fitness, but she very rarely catches anything as spoken from her mouth. Even in Planet Muscle magazine, the older ones, I didn't catch much in that area. Great stuff, John, as always. Rakan Khan said, another fantastic interview by Mr. Hansen. What a great and respectful lady Corey is. Wow, Mr. Hansen, please continue to interview the legends of the golden era. You definitely are making history, my friend. Robert Damaris said, great interview, John. I'm a little older too, like you, 56, and all this brings back great memories. We didn't have the internet back then, so we had to wait for the magazine to come in the mail, which built the excitement just waiting to see all the pics and read the articles. It was cool to see the beautiful built women hit the bodybuilding scene back then with Rachel, Corey, and Linda. Corey was my favorite. She was beautiful inside and out. They don't look freakish in those days. The Olympia is looking for something new. Why not bring back couples, especially the new owner is into women's bodybuilding? I actually mentioned that in our interview with Gary Bartlett. Dark Solara said another great one. Thank you. Vegas Love Forever said Corey was amazing. Glenn Shimmer said, John, your interview should be the highest rated YouTube interviews in all social media bodybuilding. Always a highlight when you post new interviews. I love this incredible interview. Tony Malkazan said, oh my God, the female goat. Corey was not only a fantastic champion, but a fantastic person. I met her only once, and she was so nice and full of positivity. John, I don't know if you can interview a better person going forward. The Pump Room said, awesome interview. Thank you. Bernard Roth said, what a classy individual. She is a true champion in every sense of the word. I really thank you for whatever legwork you had to do to get her. What a motivational champion. Anthony Slewinski said, if it wasn't people like you and Rick Drayson, these stories and people would be forgotten. Thank you, John. Jerry Inuzzi said, another very good show, John. I always liked Corey and Jeff. I was very sorry to hear he passed. I preferred Corey's look before she put on the more muscular version. Her pre-Olympia body was a nice combination of feminine muscular development. Stacey Bentley had that as well. I like how she said the look of the early bodybuilding women has a more athletic look that favored women with that toned, slighter muscular body. A much easier physique to reach for than what we see today. Awesome to hear she has embraced Christianity. Iron Man said Corey hit the nail on the head with her comment about competition being an option for most people because the level of physique wasn't overly muscular. That's what today's men's competitions need to help get the sport back on track so we see beautiful bodies back on stage. All right. I got also some comments on my Facebook page, actually a lot of comments. Roland Graham said, I love her. She even messaged me after her husband passed away, thanking me for my condolences. And Corey answered Roland, and she said, Roland, I answered because you were so incredibly thoughtful. Thank you again for caring. Don Marcel said, Corey Everson is a legend of bodybuilding, movies, and television. Sven Ole Thorsen sent Corey a heart. Stephen Allen Rubin said, I love women like her. Tim Gardner, our famous promoter here from Tampa, said, tell her hello from Tampa Tim. Moisey Richardson said, her and Carla Dunlap are the best. Nancy Danino said she's always been one of my favorites. Dale Ruplinger, who we had on the show about a couple months ago, said, I met Corey at the Central USA competition. She won the women's division. I won the men's division. Jeff Everson won the heavyweight, and I won the overall. I thought Corey was such a beauty and always a truly classy lady. And Corey answered Dale back, and she said, hi, Dale. I've been wondering where you've been. I hope all is great with you. I miss you. Carlos Aris said she was the epitome of female bodybuilding, beautiful, feminine, a fantastic physique, classy, and smart. Dave Mastorakis said Carla and Rachel get my best of vote. Wes Glenn said, what a class act, polished professional that is a beautiful soul. We could all learn from what she brings to this world. Thanks, John. Gregory Morton said, wow, congratulations on another great guest, John Hansen. And then Corey said, thank you, John. You're such an amazing bodybuilder yourself. Congrats on your own successes. Thank you for having me on your show. Sorry I cried in the beginning, but we did get past it and on a roll. Your listeners are lucky to have your podcast filled with your incredible knowledge. Thank you, Corey. What a great comment that was. Troy Zuccolato said, I love Corey. Eddie Robinson said, who didn't love Corey? This is women's bodybuilding. Today's women are equivalent to 1980s men's division, just a little bigger. Chaya Byrne said, so beautiful. Eric Smote said, oh yeah, good Lord, Corey. David Young said, Corey is amazing. John Lowry said, unbelievable. Karen Siraki Jepson said, Corey was an inspiration to me. Back in 1983, I was the only female who lifted at my college campus gym. I was a gym rat, and finally after a year, the male bodybuilders actually started talking to me. Now an incredible amount of women lift. Thank you for being a huge pioneer for women everywhere. I have been a weightlifter for 37 years and counting. Miriam Jenkins said Corey was one of my favorites. Moisey Richardson said Corey is a class act. Janet O'Hara said, I can't wait to listen. Mark Caffrey said, great conversation and insight into the career of a legend. Thanks again, John, for keeping the golden era alive and well. Mike Kaiser said, we all love Corey. I first met her when she was with Jeff. Kent Byerly said, she was awesome. Wayne Wilson said, the best ever. Terry King Fisher said, I so remember those days. And Billy Thomas said, I love her. I met her in 92 at her grand opening of her Olympus Gym top floor of the Hilton Clearwater Beach. I was starstruck, and I got this picture in Muscle and Fitness, too. May in the feedback section. I was so stoked. Jeffrey Lynn said, Corey was amazing and such an inspiration to me. I named my cat after her back in the early 90s. I met Corey at the Olympia in 94. I had bought a beautiful poster of her, and she signed it for me. I still have it framed. She was the best women's bodybuilder in physique. Thankful for what she's done for our sport. Don Bresano said, one of the pioneers in women's bodybuilding. Corey was an amazing athlete in person. I did a lot of photography coverage and writing for Jeff Everson for Planet Muscle magazine over the years. Dan Dillon, the mayor of bodybuilding, said he met Corey at the Arnold. She's such an elegant lady. Ted Anderson said she looked so good. Christopher Ryan said, stunning, kind women. Lena Johansson said, amazing lady, favorite photo. Claudia Wolfberger Reisinger said, a fan forever. Eric Burke said, great interview. I finally hope now that the Miss Olympia is back and both Olympias are finally run again by someone who actually cares about bodybuilding, that icons like Corey are asked to be involved with the show. It's shameful what the IFBB did to the Miss Olympia and its history. Pete Fancher said, I just listened to this, and this is the best interview of them all, John Hansen. Corey was refreshing, funny, and genuine. This is certainly the best of the group. Great job. And Brett Davis said, I love your work, John. Keep it coming. And I think we got a few other ones. Yeah, on my YouTube video I put up on my Facebook page. I got a few more comments here. Jim McGovern, my friend Jim McGovern from Chicago, said, awesome. Moisey Richardson said, as amazing beauty, Hollywood should have used her talent more. Female bodybuilders should look like this again. Daffy Kaiside said, I love Corey. That's as far as the look should have went, in my opinion. Muscle, but feminine and sexy. Larry Bernstein, who we had on the show, said, great interview as always, John. Corey rocks. And yes, that level of feminine muscularity should have stayed at this level. Pat Neve said, another great interview, John. I think I was the first promoter to have Haney and Corey together. Corey was wonderful, and she spoke so well. Tim Lavin said, great job with the podcast. This was awesome, with Corey being a Chicago native and so dominant and the most popular time in women's bodybuilding. And Robert Puente said, amazing, and she still looks amazing. Linda and Corey, wow. On my Bodybuilding Legends show page on Facebook, Carlos Aris said, there's no female bodybuilder that ever looked as good as Corey did. If female bodybuilding ever went back to looking like she did, it would rise to the top again. And on my other John Hansen page on Facebook, Peter Schuler said, highly informative and insightful podcast, John. I'm glad you asked Corey about her 1991 film debut with Jean-Claude Van Damme, in which she illuminated her Christian principles. On a side note, when Corey mentioned how beautiful Rachel was, I'm surprised you didn't compliment her beauty as well. I'd like to think I had the courage to. Once again, awesome effort every week. Much appreciated. All right. So we got a lot of comments. So everybody loved that interview with Corey. I'm glad people liked that so much. I thought it was a great interview, too. I thought she was a great person. So it was really, really great to get that interview in. Hopefully we can get some more women bodybuilders like Tanya Knight, Diana Dennis. I'm trying to get Carla Dunlap. I have reached out to these ladies several times, but no one is responding for some reason. I don't know why. All right. I also have some exciting news to mention about my upcoming seminar, which is about a month away. It is on March 21st, 22nd out here in Tampa, Florida. If you go to johnhansenfitness.com, you can check out all the details. It's going to be a two-day seminar. The first part of the day will be in the classroom where we're going to talk about all subjects related to bodybuilding, including, of course, training and genetics and nutrition and how to put together a workout program. It's going to be very, very detailed. And then in the second part of the day, we're going to go into the gym at the Powerhouse Gym Athletic Club where I train. And we're going to go over all the exercises that are the most important for developing your body. So it's going to be a very, very extensive seminar. It's going to be a two-day seminar on Saturday and Sunday. And again, that's March 21st, 22nd. So the deal is, now I'm offering a two-for-one special. So if you register for the seminar, you will be able to bring someone with you for free. If it's your wife, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your training partner, I just had a gentleman sign up this week. He's bringing his daughter with him. So I think this is a great, great deal. So if you guys are interested in this, please sign up as soon as possible, because once we get a certain number of people, we do have to close it. Otherwise, we won't be able to do the training efficiently. So if you do want to come, this is a great, great opportunity. 2-for-1, come out to Tampa, Florida. Or if you don't live in the Florida area, come out to Florida and come out at the end of March. It's great weather out here. So go to johnhansonfitness.com and sign up for that. My online coaching is really going well also. I have a couple people getting ready for competitions, and they are losing weight every week. And the people who are involved in my John Hansen Fitness Challenge are really, really doing good. So I'm really excited about that. I think we're on our 5th week now of a 12-week challenge. I'm really excited about how great those people are doing. So I have a lot of programs to offer. If you go to johnhansonfitness.com, you just want to lose fat. I even have a yearly program where I can follow you for a whole year. So that's a great deal too. If you're getting ready for a contest, whatever you like, we've got it on there. So check that out. And I just put up my chest and tricep workout on my YouTube channel. So that is up there now. I just put that up like yesterday, I think. That's getting a lot of views. So check that out also. I'm just actually filming my workouts and giving some instruction along the way. And so it's pretty hardcore. I'm using actually the weights I normally use. And it's not just the demonstration exercise. It's my actual workout. So I've got now my back workout up there. Put my shoulder workout up there like 2 weeks ago, and now I got my chest workout up there. So next week I'll probably throw my leg workout up there. Check that out. I am a guest on Advices Radio with Scott McNally, so that should be up by the time you hear this podcast. He said it's going to be up on Monday the 24th. So check out Scott's podcast. It's called Advices Radio, or you can also, I believe, check it out on YouTube. I believe he has it on both channels, YouTube and on podcast. And that's about it. I got the Arnold Classic coming up in only 2 more weeks, if you can believe it. I'll be heading out there this year. So if you see me and you listen to the podcast, please stop by and say hi. I will be out there just doing interviews, not really working for Old School Labs or anything. I'm just going out there by myself, and I'll be doing interviews and going to the show, of course. So it should be fun. I haven't been out there in about 4 years, so I'm looking forward to it. All right. Before we get to our interview with Gary Bartlett, I also want to mention our other sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com, and tell them that you heard their ad on the podcast, and they will give you a free consultation, plus they will give you 20% off your order. All right, that is it for our opening. Here is our interview with Gary Bartlett, where we talk about old school bodybuilding, and we talk about the magazines no longer being around, and we also talk about the 1982 Mr. Olympia. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and my special guest this week is Gary Bartlett from Canada, and we've had Gary on the show before. He was one of the best photographers and the most popular photographers in bodybuilding in the 1970s and 80s. He used to work for Muscle Mag International, and he's still involved in the sport. Gary, how you doing?
Good, John. I appreciate the nice intro. Everything's good up here in Canada, other than the fact that it's freezing cold.
What's the temperature up there?
It was like 25 below here last night.
Ooh, wow.
It's supposed to get a lot much colder than that tonight again. Wind chill, you get down probably to about 27, 28, but actually supposed to warm up to zero. Now, zero is quite warm for us. Supposed to warm up to zero tomorrow or the next day. I'm sure it's a little different from what you're experiencing there in Tampa.
Yeah, it dropped down to 50 tonight. Now it's cold. I was ready to turn the heat on, so 27 below is pretty bad.
Well, I feel really sorry for you to have to
turn that. Right. So, Gary, we got the Arnold Classic coming up only a couple of weeks from now. Are you headed out there again this year?
No, the problem is, John, now with the demise of all the bodybuilding magazines, I really don't have clients anymore. And I see And I see this last week that we even lost to the Muscle Fitness. Everything's going digital. But another thing, too, is everybody now is a photographer with these new cell phones and, you know, digital cameras. And the art of the old days when we used to be very few of us that did it sort of made us outdated now. We're kind of like dinosaurs. So other than going down, you know, on my own just to see the show, I really don't have any clients anymore. And not a lot there that I haven't seen that I, you know, would see that over the years. I attended 25 of them. And so 25 is a pretty good run. Seen a lot of changes from the first one until the last one I saw. Yeah, especially since they took down the veterans and moved it to the new place. The old veterans, they had a lot of memories there. A lot of bodybuilding ghosts running around that building, but it's no longer there anymore.
How did you feel about that when they took that down?
Kind of sad because it had it was nostalgia, and I've seen a lot of great shows there. My first Olympia was at the Veterans. It was in 79. One where Zane was against Mensur in the final. Remember, they had the heavyweight and sort of, a super heavyweight. Zane won one of them, and Mensur won the other. So that was kind of memorable for me because that was my first Olympia. And also at that show that Lorimer and Arnold put on, they also had the World Championships. The IFBB World Championships were done at that time as well.
So all in one weekend. Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah, we had some guys from Canada here that I knew that competed in it. So it was quite a weekend for me. Of course, in those days, there was no women's bodybuilding, and there was no bikini. It was just pure bodybuilding weekend, and it was a lot of fun. That was 79. That was the first show, that first Olympia I attended. And Zane, of course, beat Mensur. And there's a bit of controversy about it because a lot of people thought Mensur should have won, but Zane was ripped. I think that was one of his best shapes ever.
Oh, yeah, I do too, yeah. Yeah, I felt the same way when they tore that down because I went to my first one in 77, and then I attended all those Olympias throughout the years, and then, of course, the Arnolds when they started there. And I never felt emotional about them tearing a building down, but when they tore that place down, it was like, that was really, like, terrible, you know? So many great shows.
For me, it was something special because it was one of the big things that the Lorimers allowed us to do and Arnold. They were great people. I mean, I can't highly enough of the way we, as the press, were used by people that worked for Lorimer and them. They took us from the airport to the hotel. They had shuttle services. I mean, they treated us like gold, and I can't speak highly enough of them. And one of the things also was we were allowed to go backstage, and in the backstage, the warm-up area was really nice, and we had some great chances to shoot some shots backstage. I was one of the guys that used to do the backstage Olympia. That was my big thing for Muscle Mag. I'd sneak back and say what was going on behind the scenes, and that was one of the first guys to do that in magazines, and that was quite popular. So we were doing it back with the Arnold as well, and I specifically remember they had this old mirror just before you come out on stage, because the guys would go from the back area, which was kind of a room. Actually, it was a room with a little stage in there. It must have been used for performances, small performances and things. That's where the guys warmed up. So Arnold would come in, and you know we hang back there. And I remember they had this little mirror out front. And I remember the guys, before they go out on stage, they were trying to see themselves in this little mirror. It used to be so dirty, you hardly see an image in it.
And I
would take photos of it, and I'd get the photos processed, and I'd laugh because it was so dirty, you could hardly make the guy's image out on the mirror.
Right.
And also back in those days, John, you probably remember yourself in 77, when you first started going, there was no music for the guys. They had a piano player.
Right.
Remember the piano player, he'd be playing the music, and the poor bodybuilders, so they wouldn't have a chance at all to sync the music with the routine, so it was a little bit awkward. It was not the professional routines that we saw down the road, and then eventually they added their own music, but that was kind of funny when I think about a piano player now.
Right. Yeah, the first contest I remember seeing was 81, where they had the music.
Yeah.
I remember seeing it in the 70s.
Yeah, you're probably thinking laughing back is probably something you never thought about.
Yeah.
Back that far that you know, you never had any music, and certainly added a lot to the shows.
Amazing how
far they've come from then until what you've seen on the Olympia stage that Dan Solomon produced last year for the Olympia, with all the fancy background, the musics, and all the bells and whistles that they've got now. We've come a long, long way. But no, getting back to your question, I'd like to go to the Arnold because there's a lot of people I'd still like to see. People I've seen, especially Jim Lorimer, who was getting up there now. He's in his 90s. And, you know, we don't know how much longer Jim's going to be around. I think he's still in very good health for his age, and I'd like to see Jim again, and Bob and Matt and some of the other people that I've got to know over the years, because you do develop some personal relationships with them. In fact, I think with the Arnold, and you probably agree with your experiences with it, that it's almost like a big family when you go there.
Yeah, because of the Lorimers, because they've done such a great job with that. They're such great promoters.
They are, and it's going to be interesting because I think they've got, in the last few years, they've had fairly weak lineups, but I think from what I've seen from the list of competitors, the lineup doesn't look too bad.
Yeah, it looks good, yeah. And then there's some newer guys coming along that are going to be interesting to look at, like that Patrick Moore. That guy was probably the most impressive guy I think I saw at the Olympia last year, the most promising guy, I should say, at the Olympia last year.
Is Sergio Oliva Jr. competing in the Arnold?
Yeah, and he's looking really good, too. So that should be interesting, too.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how he does and how he makes his mark.
Well, speaking of, you said Dan Solomon, what do you think of the Olympia being sold? That was just news that just came out about a week ago.
I think it's hard to say. I think from what I've read and seen, you know, online and that, it looks like a very positive thing because I don't know Jake Wood. It's Jake Wood, isn't it? I don't know him personally. I know Dan a bit, but I don't know Jake. But it looks like he's got a kind of a Joe Eater type passion. And he's done a lot with bringing the women's bodybuilding back. So, I mean, the big thing is if he's got deep pockets and he's willing to invest, then it can only be a positive thing. But what I understand is that he's very wealthy. So for him, the bottom line is not money. It's just more of a hobby or something that he wants, that he's not big on trying to make money with it. So maybe that's a good thing. Because AMI had the answer to stockholders and shareholders and whatever. And their bottom line is the thing. They had to make money. And I know they weren't making much money in the last few years. And, you know, truth be known, did they ever really make any money with it? It's hard to say, if you looked at the books and stuff. But I think that with Jake and his passion along with Dan, I think that it should be positive. I mean, you know, but I always say too, you know, if there was any money to be made in it, AMI would have kept it. So it's going to be interesting to, and I always thought Robin, in fairness to Robin Chan, I got to know Robin well, and in fairness to him, I thought Robin did a great job promoting the Olympias. I've been to all Olympias that Robin was behind, and I thought he did a great job with them. So I mean, it's going to be interesting, especially with, as I say, you got the Arnold, and then you've got the Rock doing his thing, and now you've got a new guy with the Olympia. So you know, you've only got so much to go around. You know what I'm saying? It's like the current scene with the pros now and the amateur scene with the split from the IFBB. You've only got so much talent, and a lot of your talent is giving out so many pro cards to amateur bodybuilders. Remember the old days, like only the elite get pro cards?
Now it's totally different.
The only way you could get them, you had to go through the world championships. You had to win the NPC nationals, and you know, there was not a lot of avenues to get a pro card back in the day. And what happened was your cream came to the top. So when you had the Olympia or something, you had the elite of the elite on stage. Well, now, you know, with all the pro cards handed out, and, you know, there's one, it just seems to me it's diluting the amateur ranks, and it's lowering the bar for quality that, you know, that you'd like to see, you know, at the Olympia and or some of the big shows. And then, you know, right, you right. let's say you only get 20 good guys. So you've got three big major shows now where there's, you're going to have to get those 20 guys on stage. You see where I'm going with this? So, and they're going to have to, and I think too, with the way things are being promoted now, bodybuilding is not your number one, number one's Raw anymore. It's all these expos and bikini, classic physique and classic bodybuilding. So it's a whole mixture of them all. But both you and I, John, are hardcore bodybuilders. We're from the old school. We want to see the big, the muscle guys up there. So I'm not sure I'm not sure where we fit in anymore in this whole thing.
Right. Hey, I just did an interview with Corey Everson last week, and one of the comments I saw. Oh, thank you. I just was looking at some of the comments that people left on that interview, because I also put it up on YouTube, and I was looking at some of the comments on YouTube. And one of the guys made an interesting point. He said they should bring back mixed pairs bodybuilding, especially if Jake Wood is such a fan of women's bodybuilding. That would be cool to see that brought back.
It would be, and I've seen several mixed pairs competitions back in the day, and they do add a lot to, they do add a lot to the production, especially now when they're trying to, spread it out more with more divisions. They're bringing bringing this new women's wellness thing is online now. And then the big thing too is what we did here a few years back to increase some of our shows here. We had couples where it was a male physique and a bikini girl rather than bodybuilding. So, there's an avenue.
Okay.
You could hook up a figure girl with a, men's physique, or you could hook up a, you could hook up a bikini girl with a board shorts guy. So, you could add poses. There's all sorts you could do if you wanted to add more divisions with a he and she type deal. But, also you got to also remember the weekends are pretty long as it is with all the classes. They go on for
That's true. That's true. But they keep adding more divisions, so another one.
I know when I was shooting for websites and stuff, you had to shoot everything, and man, it was a long weekend because you would say for the Olympia or the Arnolds, you went in the morning for the prejudging and at the expo where they'd done the classes there, prejudging for a lot of them there. So you shot those all day, and then you went Friday night and shot the evening show, the finals, and then you went Saturday morning and shot more prejudging, and then you went Friday night and shot more. So time you're done, you get 10,000 images to process. So it's very long for patrons too, although some of them pick and choose what divisions they want to see.
Yeah, it's hard if you go to like a local show because they got to include all those divisions for, for any competitors that might go on a show. So it ends up being a long show. It's kind of tedious because you got to sit through division after division.
Think about the North Americans. How many do they get in that show? That thing goes on forever. But Gary does a great job of running them through. They run them through pretty quick. But if you're an average athlete and you're all excited about going to one of these shows, say the Arnold Amateur, the North Americans, or one of those shows, and go to them, and you're all excited and you're on stage for about 5 seconds, if you're not one of the top people, you're really not there very long. You're not on the stage.
Yeah, right.
They go through you pretty quick. I saw that a few years ago. Last time I went to the Arnold, to the Arnolds, they did women's physique. I think they had 45 in it. I think that was 45. Mm-hmm. I think I went to the prejudging, and I was just shocked at how many competitors there were. You're looking at 40, it was over 40 in one class. So, man, did they have to weed them down some fast. So a lot of them, that were pretty good women's physique competitors, they didn't get much attention. They went through them quick. And it's just, I don't know. It's just so much. There's so many and so fast. And I feel sorry for the athletes, but it's the way it is. You don't make the cut. It's like golf or any other sport. You got to make the cut.
Well, talking about that mixed pairs though, that it would be interesting now with all these different divisions, if they did just open it up and say, hey, we're going to have mixed pairs and anybody could enter, you get guys and girls from all these different divisions. So that would really be interesting how they, it would be up to the athletes on how they would interpret it and how they would pair it up and what kind of routines they would do. I think it'd be really interesting.
Well, the big thing is you can almost run it on its own. You know what I mean? Like you could run it, you know, if you get a bunch of physique and figure and wellness mm-hmm. and men's board shorts and classic physique, if you threw them all in together and had them all come out in different pairs and that, you could have almost enough to sort of run its own competition and put up lots of money for
right.
it, push it to the public more because it would be more acceptable, and maybe a TV thing might produce it, or something like The Rock might be interested in producing something like
yeah,
that. Who knows, eh? I mean, might be on to something.
Well, that's what was so interesting about the mixed pairs was the creativity was really there because you had two people. So it was, you know, it was just up to the couple on what they wanted to do with it. You know, and they didn't have any set rules. It wasn't like they had to do certain moves. They could do whatever they wanted with it. So it was really cool.
So the thing is, you structure it. You make them do certain mandatory poses together. They'd have certain ones together, and then you'd let them do their creative thing by their own posing routine.
Yeah. Well, they had to do the mandatories, right? But five-minute routine, they could do it on whatever they wanted to.
I think that, you know, I think that would add a bit of, you know, pizzazz to it, sort of. So certainly something Jim Mannion can think about, I guess, if he hears this talk.
Yeah, that's what I think we need back in bodybuilding is, you know, we always talk about the posing, how that's not creative anymore. So maybe this would be a way to get creative with it.
Well, like everything else, John, things evolve. Sports, you know, evolve. And with social media and, you know, with the way it is now, we basically lost all our print magazines and social media's taken over. And I know that with Dan and Jake, they're going to be doing muscle fitness and stuff online, I guess, now. But as you know, it's just not the same thing as sitting down and reading a bodybuilding magazine and having it in your hands, because we're old school.
Yeah.
I guess. The new generation's all on phone or tablet. So I guess it's just, you know, we're dinosaurs.
How do you feel about that, Gary? Because you grew up like I did with all the magazines and everything. How do you feel about the magazines just being kind of faded away now?
Saddens me, John. It really does. Because my big thing was I'd go up to the local magazine store and there'd be six titles there you'd grab. You know, I bought them all when I was growing up. I mean, and at one time I wrote for most of them or photographed for most of them. Mm-hmm. And I used to could hardly wait every month to get to the store to grab one and see if I had something in there by me or a picture with my photo credit in there. It's quite flattering for a kid from a rural area in Canada here to see his name, you know, on a photograph of a champion bodybuilder. So it was quite a thrill for me, and I was very fortunate that you know, I got the opportunity thanks to Bob Kennedy. But now I go to the magazine store, and the only one left is MD, Muscular Development. It's the only one all by itself. You know, that's hardcore bodybuilding. I mean, there's other fitness magazines, Men's Health and still out there. Of course, that'll probably go digital as well. And then my friend in Canada here, Terry Ferrando, has Inside Fitness. But it's generally more of spread across the board, you know, with general fitness stuff. And, you know, there's training articles and lots of stuff, sport and everything in it. But it's not hardcore bodybuilding. The only one, you know, left is Steve Blackman's Muscular Development, and you know, you wonder how long that's going to be around.
Mm-hmm. Flex magazine is gone too. That's gone too, huh?
Yeah. See, what they did with Flex before this thing came about was when Sean Perry passed away a year or two ago of lung cancer, he was one of the main driving forces behind Flex. I think he was the editor of Flex, if I'm correct about it. I may be a little bit off, but Sean was a really decent guy, a really nice guy, and he had huge passion for bodybuilding. So I think he was the one that sort of held up the torch for Flex. And as soon as he passed away, Flex, they rolled Flex into Muscle Fitness. So there was a little section in Muscle Fitness that was Flex. Like they just inserted a sort of a 12 pages or something like that devoted to hardcore bodybuilding within Muscle Fitness. But now I don't think that, you know, that'll probably be the case anymore. I'm not sure what Dan will do with it or if he'll be involved with the, you know, with the digital end of it, but they'll probably come up with something. But yeah, Flex was gone as well. I think I've got the original publication stored away, or I've got the original Muscle Mag here, and they've got the original Flex as well. But they're all half the, you know, in 10 years' time, kids won't even know what magazines were.
Right, right. Do you think there's anything anybody could do to make magazines popular again, or do you think that's just that time is gone now?
I think the time's gone. I think it's just we're talking a new generation who have been brought up on cell phones and tablets, you know, and computers. I mean, you go to these kids now, you go to a kid 5 years old, I see kids 5 years old showing their parents how to work their cell phone. You know, can you imagine?
Yeah, right.
Kids, these kids now, they can do things on their phones.
They grow up on them.
And hand them a magazine. I mean, you know, what's that? You know, they're educated. I don't even think most kids learn to read and write anymore in school. I think it's all computers. I think, it, you know, they type everything. I don't know. Like, it's just a new era. And I don't see print ever coming back. I just don't see it, you know, especially if you've never been introduced to it.
You know what I used to miss, or what I miss, I should say, about the magazines is when we used to read these long articles about all the guys, and so you felt like you really got to know them, and then they would sort of create these rivalries between the bodybuilders coming up. Like, the first year I got into bodybuilding was 77, so I started reading the magazines early in 1977, and they were leading up to the Olympia coming up that year in October, so they were talking about Zane and Robbie and Lou Ferrigno, and all the guys going in at Ken Waller, Bill Grant, Ed Corney. So you'd read the magazines every month, and then you got to know these guys because they had long articles, like personality-type articles, where they, you know, did long interviews with these guys, and the articles would be several pages long. So you felt like you got to know them, and then the Olympia was really exciting. And that was the first Olympia I went to that year when I was 14. And I was really excited about going because I felt like by the time October came, after reading the magazines all year, I felt like I knew all these guys, you know, and now it seems like you don't really get to know these guys because unless you watch their videos, but you don't get these long articles, you know, these in-depth articles where you really realize their personality.
No, that's the thing is what the magazines did do. They created heroes for us, you know, like mine was Larry Scott.
Yeah.
I mean, I had pictures of Larry Scott up my bedroom that would just inspire me to train. And then think about it, John, you wonder how far, like you wonder what Arnold's career would have been without Weeders and Muscle Fitness or Muscle Power, or Muscle Builder, whatever it was back then to push. I mean, Arnold was pushed on every issue, every cover. And even today, like even the last few years of print, Arnold was still on the covers of a lot of them to increase their sales. I mean, I knew firsthand how competitive the printing industry was when working for Bob, because you put a certain body. Bob would tell me if you put a certain bodybuilder on a cover, the percentage of sales and your percentage shouldn't have to be very much, you know, to make money or lose money. And if you put the right guy on the cover, percentage of sales would go way up. Like they would have to sell 20 or 30% of what was printed to make a profit. And then if they had 50%, that produced an extremely good profit. And Bob would do these special Muscle Mag issues with Arnold on the cover, and he said they would sell like 40-50%. Like whenever they'd put Arnold on, the sales would grade up. I mean, that's how popular Arnold was. That's how popular it was. But see, now you don't have the promotion. You don't have them creating these rivalries. You don't have them introducing you to the guys before they get on stage. I mean, you really don't know a whole lot about them, and it's just you don't have the following. You don't have the, you know, they were like in the bodybuilding world, they were like celebrities. I mean, we knew who everybody was, as you say, but when they get on the stage, I mean, all the lineup, we knew pretty well each one of them, almost like we thought we knew them personally. And the magazines created their own self-promoting advertisement for these guys, and it made them legends. Like, I mean, you know, for us, like you, I'm sure you've seen someone, Frank Zane, and you've seen Robbie Robinson, and you've seen these guys on the stage. It's like these guys came to life for you. You remember, you know, they're in the magazine.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like now, like seeing a celebrity. It really
is. Yeah, right.
You know, and another thing too, John, that we got that you don't see anymore is no one writes about a contest anymore. Like, no one writes about Olympia. Remember?
No, right.
Remember how we used to like to read the Olympia coverage by Peter McGough or a real good writer.
Rick Wayne or something, yeah.
Yeah, Rick Wayne. I mean, these guys could write great coverage of the and make you feel like you're right there, even though you weren't there. You felt like you were there. I mean, now it's just put up 1,000 pictures, you know, and judge for yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you get lost. I mean, you look at 2 or 3 pictures, and that's it. You kind of get bored and go on to the next guy and look at a few pictures. But that's it. You sign off. It's not the same thing on a computer as it is in a magazine. I mean, when you turn the page and you see all the guys together lined up there, and then you read about it, and it just inspired you as a youngster, you know, to go out and work out harder and train and made a lot of bodybuilding fans. And now it's just, it's just never endless instant pictures, you know. And the funny thing too, John, we had to wait 3 months before we ever knew who won the Olympia. Bob used to have a call-in line that you could call in to see who won before it got out.
Oh, really? Really?
Oh, yeah, that thing would light up like a Christmas tree, you know, a day or two after Olympia. They wanted to know, the fans wanted to know who won because the magazine was 2 or 3 month deadline delay between when it was finished and sent to the printer. So, you know, and then they had to go out to the distributor and then go out to the stores. So, it's 3 month lag before it actually got to print. And no one could understand, well, how come they can't get it in there quicker? You know, why do we have to wait 3 months? Well, they just didn't understand those days how long it took to get something from print to the stores. Now it's instant.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to wait 5 minutes. Now if they turn their computer on and it buffers, they get mad that they got to wait for the buffer to stop to see who won.
Well, I think it was Chris Aceto was on Dave Palumbo's show, Heavy Muscle Radio, and that's what he said. He made a great point. He said when the Olympia comes, as soon as it's over, it's forgotten about. Like the next day, it's like everybody's got the results and it's forgotten about. Then it's like, okay, let's look for the next year. It's like there's no coverage of it. They don't, like before, we used to, like you said, we had to wait months. Then we would get the articles, and then the articles would be like 2 parts, sometimes 3 parts. So then you'd have these long articles and you'd really get into it. Like you said, Peter McGough would go backstage. He'd get all these backstage stories. He would give you like a lead up for each character or each, not character, but competitor. So, you really, really felt like you had a sense of what really happened there. And now it's like you don't get any coverage. You don't get any written articles at all. You just get the video coverage, you know, the live feed. And as soon as the live feed's over, that's it. You know, like people might talk about it, you know, like the results, but there's no in-depth articles about it.
Think about it, John. What Olympia can you think of that was so much talked about than the 81 Olympia? I mean, we still talk about it to this day.
And, or the 80 Olympia too.
Or the 80. I mean, they still talk about them to this day. I mean, that's because of all the magazine coverage of people saying, well, this guy should have won. Well, Danny should have won, or Arnold shouldn't have won 80. You know, they just, it was like the newspaper industry. I mean, it just created, you know, it created controversy and created debate. And of course, when everything and things are talked about, it's just an ongoing thing. It grows itself into legends. And that's what we had back then. Some of the shows like the 81 Olympia became a legend because it made champions like Danny and Tom Platz and Roy Callender and Franco and all them.
Yeah.
It brought them all right up to the, you know, whether it was bad, negative or positive or whatever, it got everyone talking. And that was through the magazines because the next month, like you had their coverage, and then the next month you'd have somebody sticking up for Franco's win, or you had somebody you interviewed. I mean, you just don't get any of that anymore. You're right. It's over. You might say, oh, well, Phil lost, or Brandon Curry won, you know, nothing big deal. And, you know, what's going to happen next year? You know, now it's, you know, they do push it through social media. Yeah. They try to get things going there, but there's so much on social media, you can't follow it all. Everybody's an editor on social media, or everybody's a publisher. I mean, there's so many YouTube channels, and there's so much on there. Like, who's credible anymore? You know, it's certainly a positive thing. It's put a situation where you're able to do your podcast. I mean, it's a great podcast. You've really done a lot to keep the old hardcore bodybuilding golden age alive with your great interviews and stuff. Obviously, it's your passion. And then Joe Rogan has a good podcast, and you know, there's some good ones on there, but there's so much stuff on there that you just can't follow it at all if you tried to. And everybody's got an opinion.
Right.
Yeah, there was
now you were with Bob Kennedy for a long time. When you were working for him, what did Bob like focus on every month as far as, you know, like what he was gonna put in the magazines? Was it a lot of personality pieces, or you know, what did he decide to put in there?
Bob had different phases over the years. I think I started working for him back in the early 80s. And I got working with Bob because of my involvement with Canadian bodybuilding, because there was very little coverage on Canadians in any of the magazines, even as many magazines as there was there out there at the time. There was very little Canadian coverage. It's almost like no one knew that bodybuilding existed north of the border. So with me, I have a keen interest in it. So I started sending some things to Bob, and he started publishing them. And then we started doing the Canadian Corner, which, you know, started getting a lot of publicity for Canadians in that little particular section that I had in Muscle Mag. So Bob also, you got to remember, Bob wanted to cover the bodybuilding scene across the board. He wanted to do DABA. He wanted to do, you know, IFBB. And, you know, and there's a lot of rivalries going on because...
That's one of the great things about Muscle Mag, was they cover all the different organizations.
And he got in trouble doing it. I mean, Ben Weider made it tough for him. I mean, I remember, you know, a few shows we went to that we had a hard time getting press passes to. I remember one time we had to get issued armbands, or these red armbands you had to wrap. It looked like something that they wore in the Second World War in Germany. There were these red armbands had on it. I think it had IFB, the official photographer, and we had to fill out these special forms to get them, and we wore the band so that the security could see us in the press pit that we were, you know, official. So, I mean, that was crazy at those times. But Ben was very, very, very aggressive when it came to having the press support the IFBB. I used to get letters from him all the time, and he'd always say to me in the letters, or when I've seen him personally, he'd say, Gary, every time you do an article covering one of our shows, I want you to mention the IFBB very prominently. And he would say that any time I saw him, he'd want me, because I wrote for several different magazines back in the 80s.
Yeah.
And I'd cover shows and, you know, IFBB shows and that, and he'd always warn me to, because if you don't, we won't allow you into our shows anymore. So he basically, it was crazy back then. I mean, they were very wary of, they didn't want, you know, because see, they wanted all the material for the Weider magazines, and, you know, and they did, they did eventually give the Weider guys contracts, and that was because of, one of the reasons for that was because of Vince McMahon's organization, because Vince hired a bunch of them away from the Weiders when he started his own organization. So that, you know, suddenly made it so that the Weiders had to give the guys contracts to keep them with them so they wouldn't run off somewhere else. And then they were very strict about it too. Their contracts were very strict because none of the guys were allowed to shoot with us. If they had a Weider contract, they couldn't even hardly talk to us. That's how strict they were. They were scared they'd lose them.
Wow.
And, you know, there wasn't a lot of money to be made for these guys. I mean, you know, you think back, if you didn't win the Olympia back 20 years ago or 30 years ago, I mean, you know, you were basically funding your own career. I mean, mm-hmm. if you look up pro in a dictionary, it says it's someone who makes a living doing whatever. Well, back then, a pro bodybuilder wasn't making a living at it. He had to, you know, scrimp and save, and, you know, he was costing them money to try to go to these shows and compete. So the only way they could, you know, get any money ahead would be to do posing and seminars and, you know, work their guts out to try to, you know, scratch out as much of the living as they could. And a lot of guys didn't make much money. Even Olympia.
Yeah.
It's funny because I was just reviewing the 82 Olympia today, and Chris Dickerson won it, and he won $25,000. That was back in 1982.
Mm-hmm.
So last year, Brandon got, what, 400,000?
Yeah.
So there you go. I mean, I don't know what a salary in 82 would have been. I guess 25,000 wasn't too bad, but.
No, that was pretty good for back then, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's certainly not equivalent to 400,000 today, but.
But when Bob was doing the magazine, I mean, nowadays you don't have all those different organizations, really, but back then there was. It was NABBA over in Europe. That was still going pretty strong. And then we had the AAU. That was still going on, you know, when MPC started. And the IFBB was going on. So,
yeah.
But Bob Kennedy was he was covering all that stuff. That's what I liked about Muscle Mag in the 70s was, you know, of course, Weider would not cover NABBA, or they wouldn't cover Dan Lorry's shows or any of those other ones. So if you picked up if you picked up Bob's show, you know, magazine, especially the annual issues that he came out with in the 70s, I think there was like four of those.
Oh, yeah, they were
great. Those were awesome.
Because they covered all the shows, and you got an idea. You got an idea. That's where Bertle Fox first started competing.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, I didn't really know about Bertle Fox until I was reading the Muscle Mag annuals, and I was like, wow, who's this guy? You know, he was unbelievable, because Frank Zane was winning at Mr. Olympia, and then you saw Bertle Fox, and it was so big. He was so bigger, almost bigger than anybody else, you know, competing. So you're wondering, like, how would he do, you know, if he was in the Olympia?
Well, that was one of the highlights of the 83 Olympia in Munich, Germany, produced by
Albert Busek. Mm-hmm.
Bertle stole the show, and with about 2 minutes of most muscular poses, and he just brought the house down. I mean, the fans were just screaming. I never seen fans go crazy like they did for Bertle that year. And when he wasn't announced that high up in the placings, they went crazy. They started booing, and I thought they were going to riot.
Yeah.
Judges were ducking under the tables. I mean, they were throwing plates and stuff, screaming and yelling, and it was scary.
Yeah.
I mean, I never, you know, he just, and you know, he just brought them alive, and poor Bertle. I mean, he had muscle. I mean, you know, when you think, John, back in those days, I was just reviewing the 82 Olympia, looking at the mm-hmm. guys, and then checking my notes and things, because I thought we might be discussing it in this interview. But you look at the guys, mm-hmm. you look at the lineup on the stage back then, you know, 82, 83, back in those days, not one guy looked like the other guy. None of them looked the same. They all had a distinct physique. The one thing that they all had in common, tight midsections. There wasn't any guts on them, protruding guts. They all had these nice, tight midsections. Pretty small by today's standards, but man, for back in those days, they had great-looking physiques. I mean, none of them, everyone was unique. I mean, one of the things they did at 82 was Oscar State promoted it, and they had these pillars up on the stage. And they had a colored light, so the guys would come in, stand in the pillar like a silhouette, and you could mm-hmm. tell the bodybuilder who he was by the silhouette, and because they all had such distinct different physiques. Now they do the silhouette; they all almost look the same. They're just great big guys. they're not the same at all.
That's an Olympia we don't talk a lot about. What were your thoughts on that contest? Because I just interviewed Frank Zane a couple weeks ago, and of course he was second to Dickerson at that show, and he said he wasn't in his best shape. From what Frank said, he didn't feel like Dickerson should have won. But no. What were your thoughts on that show, Gary?
I think the funniest thing about that, John, it's a shame because 81 just overshadowed everything, and I think 82 got neglected because of the mm-hmm. controversy in 81. And I think 82 was also a bit of a controversial situation because, you know, in reviewing it and going through my notes and everything and looking at it and all, I've convinced that Mohammed McAway got robbed at that show and should have won it. If Chris
should have won it.
If he was, and Mohammed didn't even make the top six. If Chris Dickerson, if you can make an argument that Chris Dickerson should have like won in 82, then because of his physique and everything, then I can make an argument that Mohammed McAway should have beaten Chris Dickerson because Mohammed McAway was just as good a poser. He was he was just as conditioned, although he had much better arms, much better deltoids, much fuller in the upper body. Didn't quite have Dickerson's legs, but Dickerson's strength was his calves and his legs with his quads that were nicely separated. But going from the back, none of those guys back in those days had much for hamstrings and glutes. So they're all a bit flat in the glutes and flat in the hamstrings. So you'd go, if you turn around, I mean, Mohammed had a good back, good delts. I mean, and Mohammed was fuller. Chris was small. Mohammed was thicker. So with that being said, then Mohammed should have beaten Chris Dickerson. But if you take that away from it, the next guy that should have won, in my opinion, if you want to go with bodybuilding and getting closer to the modern age, is that Casey Viedar should have won. Casey was he got third. So Frank Zane shouldn't have been second. Chris Dickerson shouldn't have been first. So Casey was third. So that would have moved Casey up to first because Casey was massive. He was balanced. He was hard. He was looked like he was forged from, you know, from steel. I mean, overall, and he was so much bigger than the other guys. He was really, really thick and hard. The only thing about Casey, he didn't have the showmanship of Zane or the showmanship of Dickerson. I mean, Casey should have been tanned. He should have smiled more. He should have had more charisma. Should have been a better poser. See, that's where the extra little stuff comes into play in those days. And Chris, and of course, Chris Dickerson is a great poser, and he can get
them,
but if you look at Chris and look at his physique, and you can make an argument if you want, but in my opinion, Chris had a damaged left bicep that was prominent. His biceps weren't very big, not overly peaked. He also had this huge, looked like a, I don't know what, on the end of his elbow had this point on it.
Yeah, it was really big.
I mean, for me, I come from a background where I'd like to look at art, you know, art and that photography and all that. So I look at symmetry, balance, aesthetics. And for me, right off the bat, if you got a torn pec that's healed over, or if you got a torn bicep that's smaller than the other one, right off the bat, that should disqualify you against guys that are much more balanced without, you know, injuries that have healed. So right off the bat, Chris has had these noticeable flaws in his physique. Now, Mohammed had nothing. There was no flaws in Mohammed. Tom Platz, remember he tore his bicep? He ended up, well, he was huge. He was in great condition and he was huge, but he had that noticeable smaller bicep where he was tore that had healed, and Tom got six. So Tom had beaten Muhammad as well. Now, crazier than that, a guy that wasn't even hardly on the radar was Albert Beckles. Albert Beckles got fifth. I mean, nobody talks about Albert Beckles. But Albert had great peak biceps and, you know, great density in his upper body and that, but you know, Albert didn't have the legs that these other guys had. And probably the only and probably the other guy that should have maybe been in the running could have been first back then, along with Casey Viedar, is Samir Banoot. Samir was fourth.
Samir
was full, rounded, balanced. Not a whole lot of difference than he was when he won in 83, but probably not quite as sharp as he was in 83, and I don't think they recognized him for his nice balance and aesthetics and that. So Samir, you know, still had the best balance along with Mohammed. And so Samir, you know, he could have been higher too. I thought Frank Zane, probably one of his worst Olympias to the, you know, that he competed in. He just looked flat, didn't have that ultra Chris muscularity that you'd seen in, in his wins. And he actually had that muscularity back in 83. And he got second. So, you know, I'd say he got a gift by getting second, but the biggest gift to me, the biggest gift to me was seeing Chris win it, because Chris is just so small. I mean, he's probably the smallest Mr. Olympia that ever won the show.
Yeah, probably. You would have McAway, Casey, and Samir as the top three.
Yeah, okay. I probably would have had. Yeah,
Judging from the pictures, I think you're probably right. Yeah.
Based on, you know, actually go online and go to YouTube and put in 82 Olympia, and there's a whole hour show of it on there, and it's very good to watch. You can really see, you know, what I'm trying to point to by watching it, and it'll give you a pretty good insight into that. And there was nothing really said. I mean, it, you know, there wasn't much talk about it. I mean, I didn't see a lot of people arguing against the fact that Chris won. I mean, Chris just seemed to do very well with what he had. I mean, he won a lot of shows. I mean, I seen him compete and win on a lot of shows. I mean, he had very crisp, you know, muscularity and nice shape to his muscles and stuff, but I still couldn't get away from the bicep. And he also had an unbelievable calf. But he had a lot of charisma. He could pose. He could garner a lot of judges' attention. And, you know, he earned it. I mean, with what he got the most of what he had to work with. A nice guy. You know, not taking anything away from Chris. He's a heck of a nice guy. I always go along very, very well with him. But, yeah, that Olympia was, and it's a funny thing, John, in relation to it. I had written in Muscle Mag somewhere, I don't know if it was something, if I had mentioned the coverage or bad, something to do with the show anyway, that I personally put in print that Muhammad should have won. But Muhammad, when he read that, he was so grateful that he came down and guest posed for me at a show here, a provincial show here that we put on. He guest posed at it for nothing. Just for his fare and hotel and that. He didn't take any money. He just came down as gratitude to me for saying that in print about him, that he was so thankful that I said that he came down and guest posed for nothing other than expenses. So we got it paid off for me in the long run.
right. Yeah, and Beckles too, because that's another guy, like you said, he's not talked about at all in from that contest. But if you look at, I saw the 77 through 79 Olympia, and I also saw 81. Albert wasn't in 81, but he was in those other Olympias in the 70s that Frank Zane won. And he had a great physique back then, but he really didn't do well back then. He was almost like his personality came out more, and his physique definitely got better as he got older. But, yeah, I think 82 was like the beginning of that, yeah.
Yeah, and he started winning shows and started looking really good. I mean, he seemed to mature with age, kind of like Dexter Jackson.
Yeah.
I remember photographing. He was up this way doing seminar, and I photographed him working out in the gym here. And I was amazed that he was just using a 135-pound barbell to do squats with. And
wow, really?
That's what he said. That's all he used. He would do it a certain way. Like he'd squat down a certain way. He wouldn't get down too far. You know, he wouldn't get down where his knee. And he said, at his age, he was still competing at the time. And he said, at his age, he couldn't handle those big, heavy weights anymore in squatting and that. So he was just using 135 pounds and still getting, you know, good quality development. Of course, in contrast to poor Ronnie Coleman, who basically crippled himself by a squat.
Yeah.
Squat way longer than he ever should have with the poundage as he should have. And Albert still going strong. I think Albert's still in his 80s now. I think he's still fairly healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, I just interviewed him last year. He sounds so great. We talked about that because I did get his age.
I think he's got to be 80.
I got his age from born in 38.
Well, that would put him up there.
So, yeah. Yeah, so he's not quite as old as Bill Pearl, but he's I think they exaggerated his age a little bit when he was competing. I think they made him out to be like 8 years older.
Yeah, a lot of people, I never really knew when he was born back in the day.
Right. That was the first question I asked him when we talked, because there was so much controversy about that.
Yeah, do you even know when you were born? Maybe he didn't even know.
Right. I think he had to ask his wife when I asked him.
He was a good competitor, and obviously his philosophy paid off because, you know, he's not running around crippled up in wheelchairs or anything else. He's still, you know, and at that time he said to me, he said, you know, one of the things that the muscle doesn't know how heavy the weight is. He said, it's just the stress you put on it. If you got the genetics, it's going to grow. So, I mean, that's something that stuck in my mind after, you know, seeing him do that. These guys killing themselves at forced reps and heavy weights when going way past when they shouldn't, that they're, you know, as they get older. Because in the end, we're all going to get old, and it comes a lot quicker than you want it to, and you still like to feel, you know, pretty spry and healthy and not running around worrying about, you know, getting knee replacements and hip replacements, and they'll end up like poor Ronnie. I mean, I'd like to see the quality of Ronnie's physique now if he had just trained a bit smarter after he retired. Mm-hmm. You know, did a more of a maintenance type thing, I bet you he would look great. But to see him now, it's just very, very sad to see that massive monster.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's just...
You know who else trains pretty light and still looks great is Tony Pearson. I saw him in Vegas last year in September at the Olympia, and that's what he told... I think he told me he only squats with 135, too. He just goes light, but he goes fast. You know, he only takes, like, 1 minute break between sets. I think he does like 6 or 8 sets of squats, and he just goes fast. He does 20 reps.
And he's still maintaining,
hitting the muscle, but he's going lighter. Yeah.
Yeah. I see him online. Yeah. He still looks pretty good.
Oh, yeah. He looks fantastic. And he's always in shape. He never gets out of shape, you know.
Always a nice guy. I've seen Tony compete a lot, and he was a gentleman. Great guy. And he's a guy that I remember. He always had that great V taper, and always, he was always in good shape. Always in good shape. But, yeah, no.
Hey, the other guy from 82 I wanted to ask you about was Bertel Fox, because that was, I think that was Bertel's first Olympia, right? And he looked, now the next year was the big year, that 83, where he really created that sensation. But 82, he looked really good, too, I thought.
Probably in that 82 show, John, the two most muscular, thickly muscled guys in that show would have been Bertel and Casey. I think they were I think they were the version of Dorian Yates and Ronnie Coleman for that day,
back in that time,
that those thick, full muscle bellies. Casey didn't have those real rounded, thick muscle bellies like Bertel has had, but Casey had more of a gladiator took a look to him, or, you know, the more flatter type muscles, but dense and thick, you know. But Bertel had
and hard too, right? He was really hard.
Yeah. And just, you know, just kind of like a version of what's his name there. He used to compete at the Arnold all the time. I forget his name now. He was always granite hard. But anyway, I would say Bertel. The fans, of course, loved Bertel because he was from the UK. So when Bertel posed, the fans cheered quite loud for him, because that was at Wembley Stadium there, in that Wembley complex in London, England.
Yeah.
So a lot of your bodybuilding fans that in those days would have been pro Bertel, and they showed it. But Bertel looked good. He still, like, his big thing was he was a bit like Casey, a bit awkward in his posing, and he could have been a little bit sharper. I mean, the guys that were winning back then were doing it on conditioning, like Chris Dickerson and Frank Zane. I mean, they knew how to do it, because at that time the winners were you know, conditioned. And the size wasn't so as important then as it got to be in later years.
I had the videotape from that 82 Olympian. I remember watching it years ago, and I remember the thing about Zane that I remember was that was the only Olympia, I think, where he was like 200 pounds, which was really big for him. So when they were doing the relaxed round, where they were just doing the symmetry, I remember how big he looked. I remember he was standing next to Josip Wilkosz, and he didn't look small next to Josip Wilkosz. He looked really big. But I remember when he posed, nothing popped out, like you said. I mean, the muscularity wasn't there, so he was just too heavy.
No, that's the thing. And the thing is with those guys, with what they were doing back then, whatever their drugs and things or whatever they were taking for nutrition, however you want to look at it, they're getting ready for their shows. It was a very thin line with their structure, and how much muscle, hard muscle they could carry. Like, they couldn't carry the type of muscle that Phil Heath or Ronnie or Jay Cutler carried, you know, this day, the days back then. 5 pounds, 10 pounds, one way or another, made a big difference on stage and how they looked. And I think with Frank weighing 200 as opposed to 187 or 190, he looked 200 at 187 or 190 and looked like 180 when he weighed 200. So it's weird.
How that you're right.
And when he posed, it's like you're saying, when he posed, nothing popped out. You know, he just looked flat.
Right.
And I remember seeing
He did.
And I remember seeing
And he was probably not flat. He was probably full, but he just looked flat because the muscularity wasn't popping out like when he was lighter, you know.
Well, all you need is a little bit of water just between your skin and your muscle, and it just obliterates those nice deep cuts that he was famous for. And you don't see any vascularity. He had, you know, at 79, he just squeezed and the vascularity popped and the striations popped. The difference between 79 and 82 was quite different. And even in 80, after he had injured himself, he still was hard as nails.
Mm-hmm.
He just came in a little bit heavy in 82. He probably had to come in his usual shape in 82. He probably would have won.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
But he looked very good in 83. I mean, he had his muscularity back in 83, but I think a little bit of age was starting to take its toll on him. And I think he
hurt himself that year too. I think he fell off his bike and he had hurt his rotator cuff, and he couldn't really do any upper body stuff, so he was much smaller.
Yeah, but he did look much better than he did in 82. I think he got what did he get in 83? Fourth. But the funny part about a thing a lot of people don't know about 82 was Frank left his trophy backstage. He didn't take his trophy.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
no kidding.
I have a picture here of Bob, Jim Mannion, a whole bunch of Ricky Wayne, and I think even Roger Schwab might have been there in the picture. Four or five of them there. They're standing up on stage with the trophy, and I think it was Frank's.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. And, that's crazy.
And, of course, there was rumors that Frank left it because he was pissed off that he didn't win.
Yeah.
But then I heard too that it was broken, so he left it because it was broken. So I think Peter McGough knows the true story, because there's nobody that leaves a stone unturned when it comes to a story. It would be Peter. So Peter Peter would have got the full, you know, the full explanation of why that trophy got left behind. But that was a little tidbit that you may not have heard about before.
No, I never heard of it. I heard also that he broke his trophy in 1980, and then he said, well, he went to set it down in his cell. So I don't know what the truth was on that either.
I'm sure that was, I'm sure it fell with a little help.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to Gary Bartlett for joining us. And we will have part two of our interview with Gary next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you to our sponsors, Florida Alternative Medicine and Old School Labs, for sponsoring another episode of the Bodybuilding Legend podcast. Thank you to all our Patreon donors who are contributing each month to the show. If you'd like to contribute and be a Patreon donor, just go to the website, bodybuildinglegendshow.com, and in the upper right-hand corner, we've got the link where you can sign up and help us contribute for our expenses. I really would appreciate that, guys, if you consider that. And also check out johnhansonfitness.com. My seminar is coming up in only 4 more weeks. I'd love to see you guys out there if you're interested in bodybuilding and interested in improving your training and improving your physique. johnhansonfitness.com. And we do have now the special 2-for-1 offer. So get that while you can. All right, everybody. That is it for another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. We will see you next week. Take care.